Greetings. My name is Yitzhak Et Shalom, and welcome to another on in our occasional series of short podcasts on Parashat HaShavua. It is now Erev Shabbat Parashat Va'era, and there is one short piece that's not in our Parsha that I would like to take a look at. Somewhat mysterious to me, hopefully it will become a little mysterious to you, and at the end I will suggest a solution to it that may shed light on the relationship between Moshe, not only Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Bnei Yisrael, but perhaps most significantly on the relationship that is most central in our Parsha, which is the relationship between Moshe and Paro. In the beginning of the sequence of plagues, in Perek Zion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, and I read from Perek Zion, Pasuk Chet, if Paro says to you, let's see a sign, you're going to come to Paro and say, let Bnei Israel go, let's see a sign. Tell Aharon to cast his stick down, and it'll become a snake. Right, which should sound very familiar to us, because that is a sign that we've already encountered, throwing the stick down and becoming a snake. And we'll go back to that original context. That's exactly what happened. And Aaron threw his staff down and became a snake. Serpent, whatever. And the wizards, Paro called the wizards, and they did the same thing. So what happened? They threw their sticks down, their staffs became also serpents, and Aharon's staff ate up their staffs. And Paro, just as God said, his heart was stubborn, he didn't listen, meaning he did not accept the decree that he should let Bnei Israel go, and just exactly as God said. All right. Nothing new there. However, in the very next piece, we get to the beginning of what we conventionally refer to as the Esar Makot. It is not all that clear that there are 10 plagues. Certainly from the text, it's unclear whether there are more than 10 plagues. There's only really one plague, Makat Bechorot. Only several of them where the word Vayach or anything that relates to smiting is mentioned, would only be about 4 or 5 of them. Perhaps if you want to argue that it is those events where the text indicates that there was actual damage or injury and not just inconvenience, like for instance in the case of the lice, did you call that a makah? Nonetheless, it begins here. That whole sequence begins here. And how does it begin? Pasuk Yod Dalad. Vayomer Adonai Moshe kaved lev paro me'en l'shalach ha'am lech el paro v'abok in yirat ha'amayim v'nitzavtav kvato asfat ha'yor v'matash nepach l'nakach ha'ash tikach b'yadecha. Take that staff with you. V'matay lav Adonai lehi avrayim v'rim shtochan ilach ha'limor shalach damim v'avduni b'amidbar v'nilo shamat ad ko. God says, I want my people to come out and serve me. You haven't listened. And he says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this staff, I'm going to hit it on the water, and the water is going to turn into blood. And the fish are all going to die, and the ore is going to stink. And the Egyptians are going to hesitate and be restrained from drinking water from the ore. And by the way, as the plague plays out, it's quite clear from the text that there were other sources of water. There was where the Yor turned into blood for 7 days. Obviously, they'd have other sources from which they drank. And by the way, there had to be other sources, because otherwise the sorcerers of Paro had nothing to change into blood to show that they could also do it, unless there was other water that was still water around. Nonetheless, all of that, as an aside, is interesting, but it's not the problem I want to get to. If we go back to Perek Dalet, when Moshe was standing at the snap, Hashem says to him to go. There's a constant back and forth where Moshe continues to back out of the position. At the beginning of chapter 4, Perek Dalet, Vayan Moshe Vayomer, Vahein Lo Yaminu Li Vilo Yishmu B'Koli, Ki Amru Lo Nira Elach Adonai. He said, Bnei Yisrael aren't going to listen because they're going to say God didn't appear to you. In other words, Moshe seems to be asking for some sort of a confirmation that he can use to prove to whom? To Bnei Yisrael that God really appeared to him. So God said to him, what's that in your hand? And Moshe says, it's a staff. Same exact word, throw it to the ground. Here it didn't become a serpent, it became a snake. And Moshe ran away from this serpent. Send your hand out and grab its tail. And it became a staff again. And then Hashem says, that way they'll believe that God appeared to you. And before going further, he gives them another sign. Put your hand inside of your under your arm. And he did. He took it out, and his hand was white as snow. Tzarat. And then he said, put it back in there. And they took it out, and it was now like normal. And then he says, if they don't believe the first sign, they believe the second sign. That itself is kind of a strange statement. And notice Hashem does not interject in the middle and say, okay, that's one sign, and if they don't believe you, here's another. Rather, he says, here's a sign, they'll believe you, here's another sign, and if they don't believe the first, they'll believe the second. The sequencing is odd. And then the third one is, if they don't believe these two signs, take some water from the ore and spill it on the ground. Notice, it's not the way it plays out later. And the water that you take from the ore will become blood on the dry land. And then Moshe goes to the next stage of backing out. Now, you notice that there are three signs that Moshe has given. And it's presented that way. They'll believe the first sign, the second sign, they'll believe that, they'll believe the next sign, the final sign, Ha'ot Acharon. All right. Now, who are these signs for? These signs are for Bnei Yisrael, not for Paro. And we read later in the end of the parak that Moshe comes to them. He did these signs in front of the people. And by the way, they're called Otot, signs. And Vayamein Ha'am, and the people believed, and they heard that Hashem was going to save them, and they were very happy. Good. Now, Moshe did these signs in front of the people. Now, Moshe and Aaron did. Now, we suddenly come to Moshe coming to meet Paro, and Hashem gives him a little news in advance. Paro is going to say to you, I want a mofet. What's the difference between an ot and a mofet? An ot is a sign, a mofet is a wonder. What's the difference? An ot means there's something about the event that is instructive. It's not just a wow, it's not just impressive and amazing, it's instructive. As opposed to a mofet, which is just really impressive because it's just so amazing. And therefore, the otot, the Bnei Yisrael, the first one of those otot, in a slightly different fashion, becomes a mofet, an impressing kind of act, which Moshe is going to do. But what's the act? It's different. Hashem doesn't say to Moshe, throw your stick down, but rather you tell Aaron to throw his stick down, it'll become a serpent. And then what happens is the wizards throw theirs, they become serpents, and Aaron's serpent eats their serpent, which probably parenthetically may remind us of the story of Yosef's interpretation of the dreams, in which Paro had dreams, and the skinny stalks ate the thick stalks, the skinny cows ate the thick cows, and they remained skinny. We have to assume that Aaron's staff didn't get fat and start burping and etc. after swallowing the other serpents. It remained a small staff when it went back. And of course, in that scene of the interpretation of Pharaoh's dream, we have the first mention of the wizards of Egypt, the Chartumim. So there's something to think about, but I want to focus on a slightly different direction. The next thing that happens after Paro is stubborn in our parsha is Hashem tells Moshe to warn Paro and to have Aharon, hit with his staff on the water and turn the water into blood. But not water we're going to spill out on the ground, but water in the Yaor. The question I really want to focus on is what happened to the Tzarat? If, for one reason or another, Hashem has decided that Moshe has to repeat these signs as wonders in the presence of Paro, to impress upon him that they really are agents of the one and only God who controls all, as the eventual message is, then how come Tzarat isn't included? If Tzarat is good enough for the first scene, why isn't it good enough for the second scene? And to understand that, we have to understand what Tzarat is. Well, we don't really know what Tzarat is. It's some sort of scale disease. One thing we know is it's not leprosy, but it is some sort of scale disease. The question is, when does it happen? So it's clear that from the Tanakh's perspective, Tzarat is always seen as a punishment. But a punishment for what? The conventional wisdom says that it's a punishment for Lashon Hara. But investigation of the sources indicates that that's not really the case. What is the first famous case of Tzarat? The first famous case of Tzarat, of course, is Miriam, Aharon and Moshe's sister. And that is in Bamidbar Yodbet. And take a look at the scene in Bamidbar Yodbet. If you have a Tanakh available, a Chumash available, take a look. In Bamidbar Yodbet, the passage begins, Vatadaber Miriam v'Aharon b'Moshe. And the Vatadaber there is quite instructive. Even though Miriam and Aaron are presented as speaking, it's Vatadaber, she spoke. As Miriam spoke and Aaron was present or whatever. And they spoke about Moshe. We don't know what they said about Moshe, big machloket. They said that Moshe has abandoned his wife. Moshe married another woman, the Cushite, whatever it may be, unclear, but they spoke about Moshe evidently in a disparaging fashion. So we think that whatever consequences will happen are the consequences of Lashon Hara, but that's not really what happens. Take a look at Pasuk Vav, when Hashem chastises them. Vayomer Shimuna Dvarai, listen to me. If you have a prophet of God, I speak to him in dreams. Lo chein avdi Moshe b'chol beit Nemanu. That is not true about Moshe. He is trustworthy in all my house. Pe el pe adaber bo amarei v'lo v'chidot. I speak to him face to face, mouth to mouth, with a vision and not in riddles. Utmunat Adonai Abit, he looks at the visage of God. That's the kicker. Why were you not afraid to speak about my servant Moshe? In other words, you are speaking about Moshe as if he's nobody different than you, but he is very different than you. You are Nevi'im, you have prophecy in your dreams and riddles and visions. I speak to Moshe directly. Why weren't you afraid to speak about Moshe? And then the result, of course, famously, is that Miriam gets Tzarat. We will reserve judgment in the meantime as to what the particulars of her crime are that lead to Tzarat, and we will go to the next famous mitzvah. And the next famous mitzvah is all the way in Malachim Bet Perak Dalet, and that is Naaman. Who is Naaman? Naaman is the general of the Syrian army. This is in Perak Hay. Is the general of the Syrian army, who has been very successful. Ish gadol ifnei Adonai v'nesufanim kivonatan Adonai chual aram va'ish haya gibor chayil mitzora parakei pasuk aleph. He is a mitzora. What happens? They conquer a particular place and get a young girl from Eretz Yisrael, who says, if you come and meet the prophet in Shomron, he'll cure you of your tzarat. One thing leads to another. I won't go through the whole story. It's a beautiful story, and everybody should read it and be familiar with it. But Naaman comes to Elisha, the Navi, expecting, well, we'll see what he expects. Take a look at Pasuk Yod. Elisha sends out a messenger. He doesn't even come out on his own. Sends out a messenger to Naaman, who's outside with his entourage, outside of Elisha's house. And he says, go tell Naaman to go into the Yarden, dip 7 times, and he'll be fine. He'll be, like, fresh. Naaman. And Naaman was angry. Why was he angry? I thought he would come out here. I thought the Navi would come out. Ve'amad v'kara b'shem Adonai Elohav, he'd call out in God's name. Ve'nif yado al ha'makom v'yasaf ha'mitzorah. He would raise his hand, do some sort of wizardry, and he would cleanse me of being a mitzorah. And then he says, the rivers in Damascus are better, I'm not here, I'm not going to do this. And finally one of his servants says to him, listen, this Navi is a big guy, you should do it. He does it, he goes into the Yarden, he comes out, his skin is fresh like a newborn baby, and he feels great. And then he comes to Elisha and he begs forgiveness. He says, I now know that Nish Navi be Yisrael, etc., etc. Good. So what was Naaman's crime? Well, let's see a little further and we'll go figure it out. At the end of that story, which at this point is a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, a foreign army, its general comes to the Navi Yisrael, and the Navi cures him. But the Navi has a servant named Gehazi. And Gehazi, we find out several times, is a really lousy guy. And Gehazi comes up to Elisha and says, you know what, Naaman offered to give us a gift, why don't you take it? And Elisha said no. So Gehazi, in any case, ran after Naaman and said, you know what, some of the boys have come, they need some food, and Naaman gladly gives him a gift. But Gehazi was keeping for himself. Gehazi comes back to Elisha, and what does Elisha say? He says, Lo libi halach kasher chafetz ish me'al merkavto. You've taken all this stuff. And he curses him. What does he say? Sarat Naaman tibak b'cha uvzarcha li'olam. And so Elisha curses Gehazi that the tzarat of Naaman will stick to you and to your kids forever. Same with Naaman tzarat kashalig. And he leaves his presence white as snow. The same exact phrase used in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu. There is one other famous mitzvah that shows up in Tanakh, and it's the most curious story. But let's review what we've seen so far. We saw that Miriam spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu in a way in which she equated herself to Moshe. And Hashem says, don't you realize that Moshe is so much greater than you? Why were you afraid to speak about Moshe this way? It is about Lashon Hara, but not Lashon Hara in the conventional sense of speaking disparagingly about somebody, but rather it is a case of Lashon Hara where you are speaking about somebody who is far greater than you in terms as if they're an equal. Then we see that Naaman, here's a Mitzorah. We don't know what the cause of it was, but we see what kind of attitude he has. He has the attitude that he's a big general. This prophet should come out to greet him. He thinks himself to be higher. He realizes his error after he is cured, and then he is obeisant to the prophet, and he accepts the prophet's position. Who then becomes a Mitzorah? Gehazi. What did Gehazi do? He arrogated the position of his own Rebbe. His Rebbe told him what to do, and he did the opposite, thinking, I know better. And therefore, he got the Tzarat. Now, who is the last character who gets Tzarat? It's a another interesting story in Malachim Bet Perak Tedvav. We meet a king named Azaryahu, otherwise known as Uziyahu. And in Pasuk Hey, Perek Tedvav Pasuk Hey, we find out of nowhere, and Uziyahu is presented as a pretty good guy, nonetheless, God plagued him, and he was a Mitzorah till the day he died. And his son took over for him. We have no idea why this happened. Why was he Mitzorah? Until we open up to the very last book in Tanakh, and that is Divrei Hayamim, and Divrei Hayamim Bet. Towards the end, in Perek Chaf Vav, we find out some of the great things about Uziyahu, and suddenly we find out in Pasuk Tet Zayin, after all the great things that Uziyahu did. And as he became strong, he suddenly became very haughty. And he trespassed against God. He walked in, he's from Shevet Yehuda, he walked in to bring the Ketoret into the Mikdash. Interesting, he has the same name. There were 80 Kohanim who followed him in. They stood over him. It's not your place to do bring a Torah. It's for the Kohanim. And it's not your position to do this. Get out. He had the mikteret to bring the ktoret in his hand. And he's getting angry. And suddenly his forehead was white, filled with tzarat, gleaming. Imagine this, they're standing in front of the Mizbach HaKtoret, all these kohanim around telling this Melech Yehuda, who suddenly becomes so haughty, that he should not be in there and he should not be bringing the ktoret, and suddenly his forehead goes Mitzorah. They rushed him out of there. God afflicted him. So in Divrei Hayamim, we get the full story of what happened in Malachim. God afflicted him because in spite of his greatness, Uziyahu decided to arrogate for himself the position of Kohen, which of course later was inverted in the story of the Chashbonim, where Kohanim were arrogated for themselves the position of Melech. Nonetheless, what do we see as a constant theme throughout the various narratives where Tzarat is introduced? It is a punishment for someone who does not recognize their own position, their own limitations, their own restrictions, and thinks of themselves as equal to someone who is greater. Whether the someone is greater is Moshe, a greater Navi, whether someone is greater is Elisha, the Navi, whether it is your Rebbe, Gehazit Elisha, or whether it is simply you're not a Kohen. That's not your position. You're not Mukudash Lashem. You're a Yehuda. You're a Melech. You've got a different position. In any one of those cases, Tzarat comes in. Let's go back to the Sneh and figure out what's the difference between the interaction between HaKadosh Baruch Hu privately with Moshe at the Sneh and what Moshe is going to present to Bnei Yisrael to get them to believe. And on the third prong, Moshe and Aharon coming to Paro. Hashem is giving Moshe a sense of empowerment, that you are able to do these wonders, these signs. And of course, there's something that is very symbolic about taking a stick and turning it into a snake. Remember, in the case of Moshe at the Sneh, the snake doesn't do any damage, doesn't devour anything. It simply is the dead coming to life. Hashem has the power to bring the dead to life, as some of the Rishonim point out there in Perek Daled, and that is what's signified by the stick becoming a snake. And the Tzarat is an inversion of that. We could take live skin and turn it dead, but there's something far more powerful than that. There is always the danger when you are given the ability to do these things that you will confuse the fact that Hashem has granted you the gift to do this ability and suddenly think that it is your own power that's doing it. Tzarat is the punishment awaiting for anyone who makes that mistake. And therefore, right after Moshe, and that's why there's no interruption, right after Moshe is shown how to turn a stick into a snake, he's also shown what the consequences are of misreading that. And therefore, those two signs, which are symbolic, sit together. And you bring those two signs to Bnei Israel. If they don't believe the first one, they'll believe the second one. What does that mean? If they don't believe the first one, meaning, yeah, we know lots of magicians who do stuff like that, but they'll believe the second one, meaning the second one following the first one will give them the full message, that they understand this is a truly Avrahamic message, a truly Yaakovian message, a truly Levi message, meaning a message that part of our family tradition, that people may be able to do great things, but they understand they're doing them because Hashem has given them that power, and they recognize that that should be a source not of pride, but of humility. And Tzarat is the warning. So therefore, the staff and the Tzarat are given as a double-edged sword or a double-sided coin to Moshe. And only after those two, Hashem says, and if they don't believe that one, then they'll believe this final one, which is taking the blood and spilling it on the ground. And that's exactly what Moshe does in front of Bnei Israel, and they believe. Why do they believe? Because he's given an essential message that they understand internally. This is somebody who understands where we're coming from, what our tradition and our understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does allow people to do great things, but they understand that they are doing it as shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not as independent wizards. Great. But now, Hashem says, when you go to Paro, it's going to be a whole different relationship. There, the humility is not going to work well. And as a matter of fact, what does Hashem say? Re'e netaticha Elohim lefaro. V'aron achicha yenevi'echa. When you come to Bnei Israel, you are a Navi, and Aaron is your spokesperson. When you come to Paro, you're an Elohim, which means at the beginning of your relationship with Paro, you're going to face him quasi-deity to quasi-deity. Paro sees himself as a deity, that's how you're going to present yourself. And Aaron will be your Navi. Aaron's going to be your spokesperson as if it's below you to speak. And therefore, you're going to tell Aaron, you take your stick, you throw it on the ground, your stick will turn into a snake, and your snake is going to swallow all of them up. There's no place for Tzarat here. There's no place when Moshe is interacting with Paro to demonstrate that humility, it's not really me, it's Hashem, because at this point in the relationship, when things are just starting off, you have to relate to Paro in terms that Paro understands. And the relationship that's being built here is really Moshe versus Paro. It is only afterwards that Moshe says, you should know that I'm not coming on my own, I'm coming in the name of Hashem, who controls all, which is a slow process for Paro to integrate, and little by little he sees and then steps back, sees and steps back, until finally, at Makat Bachorot, he sees, and then perhaps doesn't see because he chases Bnei Israel again. And that indeed is why Tzarat is not presented when Moshe comes to Paro. There is no place for it in that interaction. What happens next is Hashem says, don't do what I told you to do to Bnei Yisrael. Take some water out of the ore and spill it on the ground and show it to be blood. That's simply an oath. That's simply an indication. Now you're going to have to afflict them. Now you're going to have everybody see it. And now you're going to take their revered deity, the Nile, and turn it into not a source of life, but a source of death. It will turn to blood and the fish will die. And now it's a whole different story. It's similar to the oath that I gave you to bring to Bnei Yisrael, but now it is going to be an oath of a very different type to show the Egyptians that their revered deities really are nothing in the hands of this wizard who ultimately is the shaliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everybody should have a wonderful Shabbos.